Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, a show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I did not mean to drop that during the middle of the opening, but hey, we roll with it because we roll.
Uh-huh.
Shush. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven. Alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer Munchkin Williams.
You know, that's like the exact opposite, man.
You really are like super tall.
I'm
like,
so tall.
You're so tall. I bet you get like, how's the weather up there every day?
Yeah.
So, we got a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about a special anniversary for a certain film, which if you already seen the title of this episode, you know it's The Wizard of Oz. So it's the 80th anniversary, and we're going to be talking about that. So stick around as we have some fun. Plus, we bring back something that we haven't done in a long while. So you may want to stick around for that.
This has been done before because this is not something familiar.
Well, this is back in the old days. We're pulling from the archives.
Okay.
So.
Okay, the Filmlosophers click their heels three times and are brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. New episodes debut each Wednesday morning, and you don't even have to follow a yellow brick road to get them.
True.
Head on over to and download the latest episode on your favorite streaming platforms. Which, you know what? You know what your favorite streaming platform is by this point.
By the way, we're on Pandora.
Pandora, whatever.
Pandora.
Come join the Lollipop Guild and sing a merry tune with us.
Spencer's an alumni, by the way.
Of the Lollipop? I don't even know what that would be. Are they a confectionery guild or what?
Exactly. They make the best lollipops.
Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We promise we won't try to melt you because we assume you're not witches. Finally, float on over in a magic bubble and check out our entire list of episodes available at filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got over 178 episodes plus a recently dropped extra credit this past week that was really fun to do. And check it out if you can. But as we said, we have a great show in store for you today as we're going to be talking about the 80th, 80 years.
It's a long time.
80 years. Of loving this wonderful, awesome, unique movie, and that is Wizard of Oz. It has been 80 years since this movie first debuted back in 1939, and still, it warms the hearts of many people out there. It definitely like reaches into like the tender cockles of people's hearts.
that's
a real word.
Terrible word.
That's a real word.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things where it's like that opportunity to go back in history and be able to be a part of that kind of, you know, cinematic, you know, uniqueness, that extravaganza, if you will. It's cool. And seeing as it's still relevant even now today, it even, you know, amplifies like how great celebrating 80 years is. And so, yeah, we're taking a look at not just the Wizard of Oz itself, but we're looking at everything that it's impacted and it's impressed upon others and created like all their little babies, if you will, of other content or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, when do you remember, Spence? What age were you when you first saw the Wizard of Oz?
Young. That's the best answer I can give. I have no idea.
I was little.
Yeah, that's just like, I don't know. That's kind of one of those things where like you just know about it.
Okay.
Like, but you don't have any recollection of actually seeing it, even though you know you've seen it at some point.
Okay. I mean, yeah, sure. I just, I'm like, Spence, I'm not dragging. But okay. Like, it's one of those movies where you know at one point in time, this was put on while you were sitting in the living room with other family members. Mm-hmm. You were either at a family gathering or you were doing something family, you know, centric, and everyone's like, let's see Wizard of Oz. And you saw it with family and you saw it with everyone else, and it just, it made sense, you know? I think I remember I first saw the film back in, I want to say the early part of my, like, younger years. Probably, like, when I was 5 or 6.
Okay.
My parents are really big, you know, cinephiles, so I grew up with a really strong appreciation for a lot of older films. So this was one of those movies that's like, hey, you definitely need to see this because this is an important part of cinematic history. And even then, that was one of those conversation starters that was always like, yes, The Wizard of Oz is up there, like, with Gone with the Wind. It's up there, like, with, you know, Casablanca. It's up there with, like, Metropolis. These are the movies that end up creating cinematic history over time. And that was taught to me at a very young age. So I remember being with family, and I remember them saying, all right, let's watch The Wizard of Oz. And I'm like, what the heck is Wizard of Oz? And we saw it, and it was one of those movies that just kind of stuck with me. I mean, nobody, and you just heard the song right now, nobody really can go about, you know, their day or whatever and hear this song and not think of Wizard of Oz or Izzy from, you know, Hawaii.
What? Oh, yes.
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, stop.
Don't.
Stop.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare desecrate the name of Izzy.
I actually reach did over not this know table. That's reach, his name.
I will reach over this table.
I didn't know that until right now.
Snatch the life out of you. I feel like my mom has said that to me once or twice.
Yeah, that sounds like a mom type thing to say.
I will snatch the life out of you. I brought you into this world. I'm going to take you out. No, but like the idea that this film has been a part of our life and our parents' life and our grandparents' lives, like, that's crazy to think. Like, I know. We're old. I get it.
Okay, this movie's older than both of us.
No, I'm
combined.
I had a point, Spencer.
Oh, okay.
I'm not just saying we're old, period. That's it. No.
End of
discussion. No, we're old. Older. But it seems as though, like, this movie makes us feel young, I guess, in a sort of sense, like, in terms of length. Mm-hmm. Like, the age on this thing is 80 years. Like, you think of things that have lasted 80 years, there are structures that have that kind of, you know, age and longevity. There's artwork, there's a bunch of stuff out there that kind of hit that mark, and they're all, like, either falling apart or whatever. Like, there are things that, you know, out there that are that age, and it's like, you know, this is one of those things that has yet to lose its luster.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, I don't know, how do you feel about, like, older movies that kind of give that nostalgic feel to you? His first reaction is, ugh, nostalgia. No. Who talks about nostalgia? It's not like we're a film podcast.
I know. Wait, what was the question?
How do you feel about movies who give you that, like, nostalgic feeling? Like, older movies. And it doesn't even have to be, like, old movies. Like, I'm not telling you to be like, oh, 1914's that old Western whatever flick. No, like, movies like, you know, Goodfellas, or movies like people who are head over heels for West Side Story, or a really great Alfred Hitchcock film, you know, The Birds, not Birdemic, The Birds. Mm-hmm. But, like,
the first Birdemic, as people say.
Oh, my gosh. How do you feel about movies like that? Like, what do movies like that do for you?
Well, it really depends on when I saw them. Because,
uh-huh.
Like, I'm not saying, like, you know, kids that I, like, movies I've seen as a kid are better or anything, but, like,
no, be honest, because this is part of, like, the whole dynamic here. Like, the idea is not, we're not your typical, oh, you know, every old movie deserves its, you know, time in a treasure chest, and it's just the greatest thing since, you know, Jesus Christ Superstar, and, like, I'm not saying any of that. Like,
right.
I for me, like, my childhood, my history in movies is just deep and rich with, like, all this opportunities and whatnot. The reason you're here, Spencer, is because you don't share that same mindset as I do, and I want to know where you come from with it.
Yeah, I was going to tell you.
Well, I'm just adding a little context. Remember, we talked about this the other week. The context is king.
That's very true. It was very important to it.
Less than 178.
Yeah. So, I don't know. There's something about this particular movie that kind of just always brings me back to being a kid. And I'm not quite sure why that is. Because, like, there's other movies that, like, from my childhood that don't quite have the same resonance as this one. And I'm not sure if that's just because of the great combination of, like, good storytelling and, like, seeing a movie transition from, like, black and white to color, because I can't even think of too many movies that do that, except, like, Pleasantville.
Oh, my gosh.
That's, like, the only one I can think of. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something special about this movie. It might have to do with that song, because it's a
I mean,
good song.
Like I said, that song, it's in itself, that song alone is timeless. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was created, or I don't know if it was created for the film, but I do know that its placement in the film is like just a prime location in terms of like the whole story structure. I don't know if you know this, but there was actually a point in the filming where the filmmakers actually thought the song may have been a little too hokey, and they were going to use that song while Dorothy was in prison. Was imprisoned by the Wicked Witch. Like she was going to be singing in prison about wishing she was back in Kansas, you know, somewhere over the rainbow back home. But obviously that became like a Debbie Downer instantly. And they're like, yeah, no, we're not doing that. No. And they changed it to the beginning and made it a little bit more like a flighty teenager wondering what's on the other side of the freeway kind of thing. I don't know how much the social interaction this child gets.
I like
gets.
How you just bring such a whimsical movie down to, like, a freeway.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've seen Pet Sematary. I know what happens. But the idea of this story, it's so, I don't know if you know this, Spence, but the original story was written by an author named L. Frank Baum. He was originally, like, a prize chicken breeder. I mean, hey, he breeded prize chickens. I don't know. And so... he actually wrote a book on like his prize chickens or whatever. And so they had a daughter and she ended up passing away. Her name was Dorothy. And so in honor of, he was already writing a story and in honor of her, he changed the main protagonist's name to Dorothy Gale, which was similar to her name in some sense of the way. I think it was, her name was like Dorothy Gate something or whatever, Dorothy Gate Bomb or something. And so essentially, they changed that up, and that was before 1900, I believe. I don't even remember. But, like, the story itself became, like, an instant classic. Oh, yeah, it's from 1900. I was right! It was published in 1900. But it's interesting how people have taken that idea and have created, like, these wonderful elements of, like, children, family-centric type pieces. But the story is actually pretty gruesome. I don't know if you've ever like read up on it.
No.
So check this out. There are these tiger bear like mashups called Calidaws who are dashed to pieces in like a crevasse, like in a big, you know, section of like an open mountain. The Tin Man uses his axe to chop off the heads of a wildcat and 40 wolves. Like he literally uses his axe to, you know, destroy animals. Not to mention, the backstory alone on the Tin Man is also a little morbid, where a man who just is, like, fascinated with cutting off his body and replacing him with robotic parts, that's somebody who needs help.
Which is also very interesting that someone would think of that in the 1900s.
I'm sure, you know what, and I know, like, if we did a super deep dive, which we're not doing a super deep dive, we don't want to, like, seriously like bum people out about this book, but like there's a lot of like deep subtle ideologies from this thing. Like apparently there's a whole bit of symbolism with each of the characters and the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, the Cowardly Lion, Dorothy, and even the Wizard of Oz and the Witch. Like they all have this like sense of symbolism to the overall story, and it's kind of a lot. But, I mean, I just, for today, we're just going to have a little bit of fun with it. And actually, part of that fun is kind of taking a look at, like, some of the many iterations of, like, all the variations of the story, the spin-offs, the sequels, and even the prequels to this story. Did you know, before the 1939 Judy Garland MGM you know, iteration, the one that everybody loves and knows, there was actually 10 prior adaptations, and nobody talks about them.
Because they weren't on film.
Then you had, like, Oz, which is a 1976 Australian rock musical. That actually looked really cool, and I've never heard of it. The Wiz, everybody at least has at one point in time heard of The Wiz, which is from 1978, starring Diana Ross as Dorothy, and like you had Michael Jackson as the Scarecrow, which is probably the most famous casting for that particular role. There's like a ton of animated adaptations, including an HBO miniseries. If you know, Oh yeah. Don't give me that look. Yeah, there was an HBO miniseries. I forgot what it was called. But it was like this series of...
Okay, as long as it's not like The Sopranos meet The Wizard of Oz.
It's not... Oh my god!
Oz meets Oz.
Oz meets Oz. That'd be horrible. It was called The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. And it was like from, you know, 1986. And HBO picked it up. And they you know, Margot Kidder was like the actual narrator for part of it and whatnot. You got, obviously, the... smash Broadway musical Wicked, which was made popular by Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth, which is actually a prequel, if you will, of sorts to the actual film, the original. And those are actually based on books that are based on like the idea of like, what if the Wicked Witch of the West actually had a unique and tragic backstory before she got, you know, mercilessly liquidated by some foreigners. Not even people from. And then, obviously, the piece de resistance, if you will, 1985's official sequel to the original film, Return to Oz. And that is kind of going to be one of the little things that we focus on tonight, because of the fact that Return to Oz is so weird. It's like the never-ending story meets The Wizard of Oz, and the never-ending story in itself is just creepy enough as it is. I don't know if anybody here has seen... Have you seen it?
The never-ending story?
Yeah.
At some point.
Atreyu! When his horse goes into the, like, depressing swamps or whatever.
All I can remember is being annoyed with a giant rock baby.
I remember that, and I remember the way the floaty doggy thing laughed.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was just all craziness. But this particular film, so this was back in 1985, and it's interesting how this particular movie has not really been brought up a lot in circles of like people who want to talk about the actual official sequel, but in all actuality, it really is. It's the true to form sequel of this film. And essentially, it's Dorothy, saved from a psychiatric experiment by a mysterious girl, is somehow called back to Oz, where a vain witch and the Gnome King have destroyed everything that makes the land magical and beautiful. which doesn't really say much in terms of what you're expecting.
Yeah.
But the film stars Feruza Balk as Dorothy, Nicole Williamson, Jean Marsh, Piper Laurie, Matt Clark, Michael Sundin, Mark Wilson, Brian Henson, and a few others. This movie actually got mentioned in the Guinness Book of World Records as the film to which a live-action sequel was produced after the longest period of time, which happened to be 46 years. That record, sadly, was broken by Bambi back in 2006, which is stupid.
Well, and you know what's interesting is that Disney is the one who pushed both of these sequels onto everyone.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like they're just trying to make unlimited sums of money for some reason.
Right? It's almost like they're trying to print their own money just about, you know?
Unfortunate.
Yeah. Well, so this particular film, back in 1985... is very much in that vein of like the weird fantastical world. Like during the time when you had things like Labyrinth coming out, you had things like Legend, you had things like, you had like the Dark Crystal, you had, and that, those are just live action. Like that's not even talking about like the cartoon ones, like The Secret of Nim and all these other like weird cartoons about underground, like powers and crystals and craziness and demons and Tim Curry and a mass amount of, you know, prosthetics and horns. So you're in a time where like Neverending Story is popular. This is coming popular. They're already working on like sequels. And so it made sense for the filmmakers over at Disney to put money behind a film that would be equivalent, if you will, in the amount of chaos and fantasy as this one. Now, the funny thing is, I make it an effort to at least see this movie once every year just so I can remember what kind
this
of...
This movie?
This particular movie.
You watch this movie once per year.
Once per year, because I try to make it a priority to know what fresh hell feels like. Because I don't like this movie, but it's like recognizing like how much more you appreciate other movies during that time. Like I watch this and I have to watch it in increments, mind you. I'm like, I watch it and like, it's like getting shots. Like, oh, hold on, give me a second. And then they stick you with the needle and then you're like, hold on, before the next 100. Like, I used to have a fear of needles. Don't start.
No, I did too. We're in the same boat.
All right. Needle fear buddies.
It once took like 3 nurses to hold me down. I was getting shot once.
I actually was in the same boat. I love how we went from Return to Oz to Needles. We really are talking about the HBO series.
Ah, the philosophers bringing up the horrors of childhood.
The horrors of childhood and apparently prison escapades. If you haven't seen Oz is a series about prison on HBO.
That's literally all I know about that version of Oz.
But, you know, this particular movie, it's unique in its own way, but it's so weird.
Like, what's weird about sending Dorothy to a mental hospital to be electrically shocked?
Oh, nothing's weird about that.
That's just the opening. Like,
smile, wink, wink. There's nothing weird about that. Like, it makes no sense.
Oh, no, it doesn't, because it seems like the main reason that they're sending Dorothy here is, besides to shut her up about talking about this non-existent place, is that she's not helpful in the morning anymore, and that's the real problem.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I'm like, this child probably stays up all night, doesn't get up until, like, oh, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the morning instead of 4 o'clock like everybody else, and is totally useless for the first part of the day. Can you imagine like living like that, where you had to get up at 4 just to make the house work?
Oh, no. That's like,
okay, awful. Getting up at 4, go get the eggs, go slaughter the pigs for bacon for breakfast, and then go and milk the cow for your cereal. By the way, you got to go get the grain to make the bread for your whatever, and the straw to build your house? I don't know. What do people do in the morning back then? But like, that kind of idea is like befuddling to me. It's just crazy strange.
Well, I think part of the problem is that Aunt Em and her husband are having problems, and she can't. I feel like what the real story is that Aunt Em can't handle 2 useless people in her house. She needs someone to be functional besides her.
You are scandalous. That's mean. Like, y'all need to see a therapist. Since y'all ain't got that electricity going on, y'all need to... I feel like this movie was... I don't know if this movie was like a great step for Disney. I don't know. Before we jump into all that stuff, let's talk about expectations before. And honestly, we both have seen the film before, but it had been many... well, not for me. Like, it had been like at least a year.
You said it once a year. So
well, I was going to say much time. Like, there's been many months since the last time I saw it in its full entirety. And I know for you, you said it had been a while.
It's been literal decades since I've seen this movie.
Decades, plural. Yes. Wow.
Yes, I am old enough to say that now.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I'm fine.
So we're aware of what this film is about, but it still doesn't take away from the sheer curiosity that this movie, like, emulates when you watch it. Like, you're watching it and you're like, Auntie M is literally taking Dorothy for electroshock therapy. Like, it literally says on the newspaper clipping that. Okay, here's the first mistake. She finds her psychiatrist slash remedy for her issues of sleeping in the newspaper.
Eddie, how else would you do that?
You walk into town and ask.
That town's miles away.
Then
she
I
can't
guess,
just go walking into town. She's got to wake up at 4 a.m. to do all the breakfast.
Then I guess Dorothy's not that important then, is she? Sheesh. Like, they're willing to ride, like, a whole day's worth to get to wherever that doctor's at. But, I mean, it literally didn't take long for them. She's like, oh, I've never been outside of Franklin before. And I'm like, how long did it take to Franklin? Why is there just another town, like, less than half a day away?
They are in a horse and buggy, Eddie. You know how long that's going to take just to get to a town, probably?
You make it sound like it's my fault.
No, I'm just saying it takes a long time when you don't have a car.
Ah, pish posh. So what was your first, what were your expectations before coming into this?
Okay, so really it was just kind of trying to understand my own like vague personal feelings that I remember about this. Because for some reason, the only thing I really remember about this movie before rewatching it was being mildly scared of something and then a girl shouting.
A girl shouting.
Yes.
Are you sure we're talking about the movie or your like teenage years?
No, this is like, the movie.
What's happening here?
No. Like, and rewatching it makes a lot of sense in context.
And we're changing the rating on the show.
No, so I was just mostly curious on what, was I scared of this movie? Like, I don't even remember. So, like, I remember so little about this movie. I was kind of, like, going back to it, trying to, like, figure out what did childhood me think of this movie?
What did childhood me? And that's kind of true. Like, for me, before I started making it a routine to at least see it once every year, 2 years, I don't know.
Oh, like, now it's every 2 years.
You know, I'm not as consistent as I'd like. I don't know. Hmm. It's like going to the bathroom every morning. I don't remember, like, if as a child I was able to differentiate between this movie and The NeverEnding Story. Like, Return to Oz was one, and then The NeverEnding Story was another. Because I knew that this movie was about a young child thrust into another world, who has weird companions and rides on the back of a floating unknown beast that I have no idea where they came from. And ending on a battle on a mountain.
Oh, man.
Like, that's all I remember from each film. I don't remember specifics. I didn't remember even like what the whole purpose or like plot was behind each of them. I just knew there was a kid, companions, floaty thingy. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. Falcor, that was his name.
You said that earlier today.
That was Atreyu. Get it right.
Whatever.
That's
Who
the
cares?
Name of the horse.
Who cares?
That's the name of the horse that dies. Thank you very much, Spencer. He died.
No,
do you feel better about yourself?
I thought Atreyu was a person.
Atreyu is the horse.
What? I thought Atreyu was the other kid in NeverEnding Story that's friends with What's-His-Face.
No.
What?
You're really like batting for the hills, aren't you?
I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but no.
As in missing, like totally not getting the mark.
But if you're batting for the hills, like it seems like you could hit a hill.
Yeah, you're right. Atreyu was a kid.
Oh, I told you, a horse.
This is why you gotta fact check me. That's your problem, not mine.
What?
So.
Yes.
But like, honestly, like a lot of these people, I a lot of these movies, I barely remember. Like, I finally got the chance to see NeverEnding Story recently. I bought it on Vudu, and I'm like, NeverEnding Story is a horrible movie. Like, literally, the whole point of the film is this little boy. His mom had just died.
Yeah.
And the dad's like, suck it up, son. We all got to get along sometime. And I'm like, holy shnikes, who are you? Like, what kind of monster? Like,
that's the dad from It. Like, from that's exactly the
no,
same
no.
mentality.
This dad had, like, no emotional bone in his body. He was like
the dad from It.
And you know what? We're getting off topic. Return. So, like, what would you say, Spencer? Because you remember, obviously, the original film.
Yeah, vaguely.
What would you say is, like, the strongest tie between this film and that? Like, in terms of, like, do you think it's characters? Do you think it's storyline? Do you think it's heart? Like,
well, to be completely honest, I don't really feel like there's a strong tie at all. Like, if this had...
Is it because nobody's singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow?
No, like, if you had literally titled this movie something else and gave everyone different names, I would not make that Wizard of Oz connection.
Well, good thing. And it's true. Like, I don't really think, like, I'm asking because I couldn't really find any strong connection.
Yeah.
Like, the only
thing... Because, like, they replace most of the characters you're familiar with and just scuttle them off to the side and you get a new cast of characters with Dorothy.
Well, and not just that, but it's like you get this sense of all these individuals that were once, you know, your mainstays, like what they look like and everything.
Mm-hmm.
You get these, like, cartoonish-looking characters that look nothing like the original counterparts from the original film.
Yeah.
Like, the Scarecrow looks like...
Terrifying.
A flippin' Scarecrow. Like, he looks terrifying. His mouth doesn't move. He looks like one of those, like, suited costume people from Chuck E. Cheese. Like,
well, he is that, essentially.
Yeah.
So you're right.
But, like, you have him and the Tin Man you don't even see... The Cowardly Lion's in there for, like, a brief second because Dorothy's like, I need something to ride on. And they just, you know, vote the Cowardly Lion. That's like, I feel like that's like a jerk move because he's, like, cowardly. So they're like, yeah, he'll do it. That's like, Mikey will eat anything.
He's got a medal of courage now, so he's fine.
Oh, yeah, because that makes a world of difference.
It did like, originally, like, so yes, it does.
That's like saying, I got confidence, I got a gun. Like, no, that's not how this works. That's not how life works.
Okay, but it's Oz. It's almost like Wonderland in a sense where nothing has to really make sense.
Well, they certainly hit the mark on that one. But I honestly, like, it's... I think that's, like, the one thin-veiled connection between this and the movie. And mind you, if this movie has a strong sense of connection to the actual story, then by all means, like, seriously, that's... Great, kudos. But you have to look at, like, what is the most common form of, you know, adaptation of this story that people know? And honestly, it's the movie. Yeah, we just said, like, this movie has been around for 80 years. It has been exposed to children, after family, after family, after whatever, for 80 years, and still it's kicking. Like, the AFI Film Institute, like, the American Film Institute is, like, literally... still has it up there as, like, one of the top films that, you know, of all time.
And they should.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those types of movies. But you take a look at all that particular film has done, and you look at this, and it's like, I get Disney, they went through all the effort to, you know, ask MGM and all them to buy rights to the film so they can create a sequel. But do you think they did it justice as a sequel?
No.
Like, does it feel like in... Because we've talked about sequels here. What was that not too long ago? We were talking about It Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about, like, sequels and spinoffs, like with Fast and the Furious. Fast and the Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
We got to go through the whole dang title. Cut it out.
I know. It's such a ridiculous title.
But you have all that. And then... We've talked at length about how having solid storylines that fit both from that bridge both the gap between the films and this film, not to mention it carries a similar heart and ideology behind the films, that's what creates a great sequel. Applying that to this particular, you know, endeavor, do you think it fits?
I feel like it fits more with, like, an Alice in Wonderland type story versus The Wizard of Oz, because there's a sense of madness throughout this movie that I never really picked up on in the first movie.
Yeah, I've, you know what? I have to admit, I agree with you on that because there's some weird stuff in this movie.
Like those skater people.
The Wheelers.
The Wheelers? That is something just out of Alice in Wonderland. That's the kind of nonsense I would expect to see there. How are you going to have four wheels? Like, that's just so impractical.
I mean, you're rollerblading on all fours, buddy. I mean, I don't know. Mombi is like super creepy. She's a woman who cut off her own head and then like cut off the heads of like the turned to stone people that were in like the courtyard of the Emerald City, and then used like this powder of life or whatever to make them alive. Which in my mind, like, how did they not bleed to death? But hey, I mean, you know,
madness.
It doesn't make sense. And then she can wear whichever head she wants to at any time. It's like,
yeah, that the whole head swapping thing is weird because, like, one head will remember something, but then she'll swap heads and won't remember that same thing.
Exactly.
Because that's how Jack gets stuck up there. But the heads apparently also don't have their original memories or they would do something about her.
I agree.
So it's really weird. It's like it's not all the way thought through or anything.
Oh, not at all. But apparently it works within the dynamic of, like, I guess it's in the stories, because Return to Oz is essentially a combination of two other stories that make up this film, like that make up part of the storyline.
Okay. So it's like two books are part of this. Wait, whoa.
So
this is two books.
So Return to Oz takes elements from both The Marvelous Land of Oz, which is, you know, the second book, and Ozma of Oz, which is the third book. So it introduced like Jack Pumpkinhead and the witch Mombi and her powder of life and how like the Emerald City got like, you know, conquered and the Mr. Gump, like not Forrest Gump, but like the Gump, the flying sofa creature.
Which is so out of Wonderland style stuff.
Well, and then like the chicken and the Wheelers and
Belina,
which, I mean, I have to admit, Belina, for the time, seeing as that movie was done back in like 1985, that was a pretty good animatronic.
Yeah, I'll give the movie that, because that was a pretty good chicken. Because like,
yeah,
like it wasn't like, oh, this is super obviously a fake chicken the whole time.
I mean,
like, you can tell when it's a puppet, but like, it's a good puppet though.
It really was. What were your thoughts about the Gnome King?
Throughout the movie, like, you just don't see him. He's just talking. And it is odd as a choice to like save up for like the end with the Gnome King.
Yeah.
I don't fully understand how he even conquered Oz from all the way over there, because I don't understand how he's even getting, oh, the ruby slippers.
The ruby slippers there, buddy.
Wow.
But I don't, it doesn't, see, the thing is like, he apparently gets stronger and more human-like the more and more, like, he continues to remove people who remember Oz out of the equation.
Yeah.
I guess. And I don't understand how that works. But, like, that, it's not really explained all that well.
Yeah, like, it was clear that was happening, but not why that was happening or why that was what he was after. Because even if nobody remembers, there's a city right over there. Like, yeah. People are going to ask questions.
People are going to, they're like, hey, what happened to the town next to... Oh, we don't talk about that. Oh, okay. So...
It's weird.
That's an understatement. But honestly, like, as a whole, the film, yes, it is slightly, like, entertaining, I guess.
It's not super scary like I was thinking.
No.
Was like, some, like, horrible thing that happened. The only thing that was... there was lots of things that were bizarre, but like, just this whole idea of Dorothy making a friend that was a flying couch.
And that couch was not happy that he was made, by the way. Like, he's like, he's like, like if somebody chopped up Eeyore and then turned him into a couch, like, I could have stayed in bed today.
Yeah, no, he had strong Eeyore vibes.
I'm like, oh my God, they killed Eeyore. Like, this is Eeyore. Someone called Jim Cummings. Like, the idea of the Gump, I don't even know if that's what it's called in the book, but the idea of the Gump is just really weird.
Yeah, it's interesting.
No, here's the ultimate way to say it. It's the 80s.
Yeah.
That's really the only way to put it.
I'm curious, like, so does this mean at this point, since he's got, like, that life powder on him, can you just attach him to anything? You can just control it?
Put him on a stone statue or something, and he, like, starts walking, hey, ladies. I don't know. It's an interesting movie. It definitely, like, hits on a lot of those 80s vibe type fantasy films and stories. I don't know how close it is to the actual books. However, like, in terms of whatever element they pull from it. However, I mean, it's it could be worse, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. It could be a lot worse.
It could also be a lot better.
Well, I mean, thanks, Debbie Downer.
Well, like for
I'm
instance,
thinking over here, like, the old, like, analogy, like, well, it could be worse. And you're like, well, it could be better.
Yeah, okay, but, like, let's take the character of TikTok for an example.
The replacement Tin Man in this one.
Yeah, which, okay, but, like, this guy needs to be wound all the time. He seems, like, even though he's rated for 1,000 years of usage, like, his runtime seems to be 5 minutes. So, I don't know how specifically useful that's supposed to be for your army, Oz.
Yeah.
Again, this is just Wonderland logic. And I don't get it. And then he beats someone up by just twirling around in a circle.
Yeah, he's spinning like a canteen or a lunch pail.
Yeah.
And he's hitting people. And then he's like torturing one of the wheelers. And I'm like, because he's like violently shaking him. I'm like, oh my gosh, is this robot like sadistic or something? Like, you won't tell us where. It's like Wilford Brimley in Copper. Like, that's what he looked like.
That would have been amazing if we got Wilford Brimley in the voice.
Oh my gosh. The Jack, what is it, like the Jack Pumpkinhead guy?
Yeah.
He was annoying. Like, I don't know if he was in the movie or, I mean, in the book or whatever, but I didn't really, like, he was like, are you my mom? Are you my mom? I'm like, gross. No, go. You're a pumpkin. Like, who's going to be your mom? Like, my mom made me. Like,
oh. Pumpkin would be his mom.
True. Like, I'd show him a pie and say, here you go. Like, this This movie makes no sense. It really doesn't. And
yeah, like, also the whole thing with Ozma. Just
this princess behind the glass, like, apparently who's free in the other realm to roam around, but she can't in this realm.
And also, like, okay, like really, this is the part I don't get. So Ozma in Oz is trapped in mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
But in the real world, even though she was introduced in a reflection, she is not limited to mirrors and can, in fact, walk around.
Yeah, because she brings she brings Dorothy like a pumpkin early on in the film. And I'm like, what's she going to do with a pumpkin? But, like, okay, whatever. And then she ends up helping her, like, escape altogether. It's like, it didn't make any sense.
And then at the end of the movie, like, how the nurse is being taken away and she's just staring at Dorothy.
Yeah, that's not creepy at all. It's like Sideshow Bob vibes over here.
Yeah.
Like, I will get you, Bart.
It's like, does she know what happened in Oz? Because, like, they're the same person.
Right.
And there's a lot of bending here, and I don't know what's happening.
Needless to say, I think bottom line of it all is, like, the original is still the best.
Oh yeah,
iteration clearly of this story. Like, mind you, for all those, like, purists out there who's like, well, you don't understand in book two and book three, like, you just gotta do, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, we're not going according to the books. We're not celebrating the, you know, 119th year of the original story. We're talking about the 80th anniversary of the film, which is what is, you know, widely known in most family circles and whatnot. So, with that said, we're going to do something we actually haven't done in a long, long while.
I feel like I've never done this, actually.
You may have. I don't know. But we haven't done this in a little bit. And
what the heck was that?
This is a segment that Mr. Chad Riley and I had used to do in a long
What a is happening?
And it is called Fantasy Cast.
Oh, is this the one where you pick all the characters as John Hamm? Well, because I remember Chad complaining about that.
Hey. Listen to Mariah.
What?
Oh, yes.
This has literally never happened when
I've done this. Oh, we are bringing it back. We are going old school with this. We are bringing back the Fantasy Cast segment. We used to do this way back when, where we'd take an opportunity to actually recreate the cast of a known film and recast it the way we would want to see it fit. And so we have a list of about 5 different people. We're not going to do Dorothy because Dorothy seems to be the one that's overly done all the time. Like, oh, I want to see.
What? That's what I put down.
No, we're not doing Dorothy. Get it right.
No, I'm doing Dorothy. Deal with it.
Fine. We'll do Dorothy at the end. So we're going to do a few of the main characters from the original film and do a fantasy cast and pick who we would rather choose. So let's go ahead and start with the Tin Man. Go ahead, Spence.
All right, this is actually the one I had the hardest amount of time with. Because you need someone who's kind of serious, but not super serious.
Okay, that's how you went with it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know who would actually... I don't know if this person actually acts at all, because he's a voiceover person.
Uh-huh.
But I would go with Kevin Brighting. He is the fantastic narrator of the Stanley Parable. It's really great.
Oh, okay.
He's got a great voice.
Okay.
Like, he's one of those people where, like, he could read a phone book and I'd listen. It's would be delightful.
There you go. All right. So that's your choice?
Yeah.
All right. I actually went in a different direction. I went with the direction of, like, okay, the Tin Man is robotic, so maybe something of, like, you know, later more recent technology. So I thought I have 2 choices, actually.
Okay.
So either had he been alive, Stephen Hawking.
Oh, so messed up. Just so you know,
he would have been a great Tin Man.
So terrible.
He didn't even have to move. He didn't even have to like do anything. He could just be like, you know, or my other choice was Elon Musk. Like, I felt like that was just a necessary...
Mr. Nuke Mars.
Exactly. Let's do the Cowardly Lion next.
Okay,
Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
You can go first.
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
All right. I have, again, 2 people. So, for me, I was thinking more along the lines of, like, size and ability to, you know, be animated and just really... jovial.
Uh-huh.
So I was thinking either Joe Rogan.
Okay.
Or Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates would be a great Cowardly Lion.
I think
she would just be absolutely perfect.
That's an interesting choice.
Yeah, don't hate.
I'm not.
Who'd you get?
Okay. For the Lion, I picked Nick Baquet. He voiced Salem from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and
oh,
I feel like
gosh,
that voice is exactly what the lion needs.
All right. Let's go with the next one. Let's go with, what do we got next? We got Scarecrow. Scarecrow!
Oh, yeah. So Scarecrow seemed like, you know, you need someone funny in that one. So I went with Alan Tudyk.
As a Scarecrow.
Yeah.
Hmm. I was thinking somebody a little bit more awkward,
mm-hmm.
maybe a little bit more stringish.
Mm-hmm.
So I have 2 choices again.
I feel like, are all of your choices 2?
Yes. I have, his name is Matty Carteropel.
Who the heck's that?
He's the guy who played the movie rental place at the end of the 3rd season of Stranger Things.
Oh my gosh.
He was also in like a series of unfortunate events, Lemony Snicket series on Netflix.
Okay.
or Steve Buscemi. I think Steve Buscemi would play a perfect like scarecrow. He already acts like awkward, and I feel like he stares off into the distance way too much already.
That's the problem of being too far into the direction of awkward. there's a threshold, and he surpasses it, and I can't do that one. I'm sorry.
He could do it. He could do it. All right, the next one. Let's go for a biggie. Let's do The Wizard.
I didn't do that one because you said we weren't doing that one.
Come on. So you don't have anybody who you consider be the wizard?
I was trying to avoid being put on the spot with someone. I don't know. Chris Hemsworth?
Chris Hemsworth. That would be oddly weird.
That could be the good kind of weird. Hopefully not like Ghostbusters Kevin weird, but like intriguingly weird.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. So this is, I'm assuming this is the area where you had Dorothy.
Yeah.
Okay. Lay on me your Dorothy. Who do you got for Dorothy?
Sophia Lillis from, It.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the red hair already. I mean, she's already playing, what's her name?
Nancy Drew and the hidden... A staircase, I believe.
Nancy Drew and the hidden film that nobody's going to ever see in the theater. If I was to do a Dorothy, which I don't have anything listed here, but if I was to do a Dorothy, I would probably have to go with an Anna Kendrick.
Anna Kendrick?
Yeah, because who's going to actually pick a kid for, you know, Wizard of Oz? I would pick either... Anna Kendrick,
uh-huh.
or that little girl from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah, she was really good.
Yeah, I mean, just dye her hair red. And
did she say who you were going to do for The Wizard?
Well, yeah, I was going to do it after we did this. I mean, shoot, I'm trying to give you a chance to shine, Spence. Come on.
Okay.
Let me help you shine.
What?
I don't know. You're not my dad. So, in terms of the wizard himself... I went with two just straightaway actors that I know would probably rock it, and that is either Keanu Reeves or Willem Dafoe. Like, I feel like those are the two that would seriously make that movie just so great. And that's not even, like, being facetious. Like, I'm not even joking. I think Keanu Reeves would make a great wizard.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. I mean, what can I say? All right, for the main baddie. The big bombastic chica. The Wicked Witch of the West. Or the East. Is it the East or the West? Which is Wicked Witch of the West?
Yeah, the West one survives and you smash the one of the East.
Okay, well, since that's been clarified, good. Who'd you get for the Wicked Witch?
I went with Michelle Gomez because...
Michelle Gomez?
Yeah.
Who dat?
She is the evil school teacher from The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina and also Missy from Doctor Who.
Oh my gosh. You and Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
No, she...
Did you happen to watch that?
No, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. That's...
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. That's
that
the
one. Yeah, the really creepy one.
Which,
yeah.
She'd do creepy as the witch really well, I feel like.
I went in two different directions with both my answers. So, like, one went one way and the other one went another way. My thought was, if I wanted a really spicy and yet kind of almost, like, nefarious type of witch, I would have gone with, like, Selma Hayek.
Okay.
She was really crazy. There's this... I forget the name of the movie. She was really intense as a main, like, antagonist in, what's it called? It's a movie where she plays, like, a drug lord. But either way, it's Savages. She plays a drug lord. So either Salma Hayek as somebody who's, like, who can be intense and, like, still have a little bit of that, like, Latin representation. Don't hate. Diversity. Hashtag.
Say anything.
No. No. Or Jane Lynch in terms of comedic. I think Jane Lynch would be perfect.
I can find that.
And we're going to throw in a bonus. Let's do a bonus. What about Toto?
The dog from Wishbone.
You cheating.
That's what I was thinking.
You
first told me
I literally
me this.
Used that as an example.
No,
I was like, yeah, we should do a bonus. Let's go ahead and throw, you know, something like, you know, the dog from Wishbone. Oh, that sounds like a good one.
No. That's not what I said. I said that's
whatever.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Whatever.
Because
whatever.
That is my favorite dog on TV.
Wishbone.
Yes. What's the story, Wishbone?
Oh, my gosh.
That show was amazing.
You're reliving your years in the Lollipop Guild.
It's the only reason I know what the Count of Monte Cristo is about.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, in all honesty, too, there's a lot of stories now that I know because of
yeah! Well, that's what I said. Best dog ever. He's a good boy.
If I were to pick a dog, I would honestly, and I mentioned this before we went on, but I would honestly pick Hercules from The Sandlot.
Oh.
Like, that just seems like I would carry that dog with me everywhere. Like, I would make sure he never left my sights, because if anybody was going to go down and do something, he would tear him to pieces. Them flying monkeys would not stand a chance. You know, and I would let Hercules just eviscerate every single one of them. Just go to town. Getting into the Cujo. Cujo. That's another great dog. I would have picked Cujo.
Cujo's a good choice.
Yeah. You want somebody to protect you. You don't want somebody that's just going to be like. If your main enemy can pick up your dog with one hand, you know you're in trouble.
Okay, but when you're not sure if your dog's going to kill the enemy or you, that's not very helpful.
Well, I mean, obviously you'd have Cujo on a leash.
That just keeps him closer to you.
Okay.
Closer to your
metal rod, like what they use for dog catchers. Just have him at length, like, good boy, good boy, good boy.
You're going to get calls from PETA now.
Never. But yeah, like, we say all this to have fun, but in all honesty, like, this is one of those movies, like we said, The Wizard of Oz was definitely a film that has changed the lives of many people and has actually spurned the careers of so many actors and actresses. And like we mentioned, like all the different adaptations, sequels, spinoffs, prequels, everything else, people have been inspired by the original work from 1939 to do things that were like, that were prolific now. Like you look at Wicked. Wicked is one of the best Broadway musicals out there and is still running strong with different casts and so forth. And it still has a great stronghold within the Broadway musical community. So, I mean, yeah, if you get a chance, sit down with your family, watch the Wizard of Oz, get a chance, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks, you know, do whatever you got to do, lock the kids in the closet or whatever you need personal time.
Don't do that.
Either way. And just, you know, enjoy a movie that seriously, like, encapsulated what it really meant to just have family time. You know? What do you think, Spence?
Don't lock your children in closets.
That is a great piece of advice. So that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check out all of our previous episodes on our website at filmlosophers.com. Don't forget to drop us a comment here and there on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. We got some great and exciting news coming up as we got another great trivia night in the works. As Halloween is right around the corner, we're going to be teaming up with Video Game Bang, Sacramento's premier gaming podcast, to do another awesome event over at Oblivion Comics and Coffee. So stay tuned for more information on that because we're excited. I mean,
it's going to be fun.
It's going to be fun on the bun. I really am looking forward to it. I love Halloween. I love the season. I love getting a chance to just celebrate it with other people who think the same way. So if you're one of those people, stick around, stay tuned, and you know what? You're going to be hearing some stuff. Not to mention, we got an actual really awesome episode that's going to debut this Friday. So keep your ears perked because we got some stuff for you. Right, Spence?
Oh, yeah.
So, but yeah, like we said, if you get a chance, check out this movie, Wizard of Oz. If you haven't seen it, where have you been for the last 80 years? You probably weren't even born yet. But either way, like, check it out. Spend some family time. And, yeah, I know I'm going to probably go and watch it when I get a chance. I don't know about you, Spence. You going to watch that or The Wiz? What you going to do?
I've already started listening to the Wiz soundtrack.
I knew it. The moment we mentioned it last time, I knew you were going to be like, I'm going to lean over and click. But yeah, either way, any opportunity to celebrate that incredible work of art is an opportunity well spent. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.